Greetings, everybody, and welcome to another episode of H2O Talk, the podcast that's all about water and environment. And today I'm here, of course, with co-host Greg Dewey, and we have a special guest, Scott Hummer, who we will introduce in a few minutes. Just a little programming note is we're doing a little change to the podcast. Greg Dewey has been sitting in for Tom Check, who's still overseas, but we have asked Greg to join us as a permanent co-host. So I guess we're going to be the three amigos of water or something like that. So let's go ahead and do a little water news before we go to our guest. And Greg, I know you wanted to bring something up, so I'll hand it over to you.
Thank you, Tom. Greetings, everyone. Well, this year is setting up another interesting year, especially in the Pacific Northwest, with what is called the Atmospheric River. That was a term that a lot of us heard for the first time last year in California. But it looks like this is setting up in the Pacific Northwest, and more than 8 inches of rain fell over that region in the last 24 hours, and rivers are starting to rise in a flood stage, with multiple rivers forecasted to reach major flood levels over the next 24 hours.
Yep, more rain for those guys.
Yes, so we'll see what happens there. And then the other item I wanted to bring to your attention is that in Colorado, the state's top water law enforcer, known as the state engineer, is retiring. His name is Kevin Ryan, and he is retiring at the end of December, and the governor will be appointing a new state engineer in January.
And we haven't heard of any candidates or anything lately?
No, I was a little surprised to actually hear about this retirement, have the announcement. I think it just occurred in the last few weeks. I'm sure there are some names being floated, but I haven't heard of any yet.
Okay.
But yeah. I think it's a great segue because our guest is also was a water law enforcer on the ground and retired from the state. So I'm excited about our guest today.
Yep, I am too. All right, so Greg, let's go to our guest, and you can do the introduction.
Thank you, Tom. Scott Hummer is a water professional. He's been involved in the state of Colorado for over 30 years. He was a water law enforcer fulfilling the role of water commissioner on the Blue River in the western part of the state. He also has experience working for a large irrigation company and the Colorado Water Trust. And so without further ado, I want to introduce Scott Hummer.
Thanks for joining, Scott.
Thank you.
Scott, I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about how you got started in the field of water.
Well, I was a non-traditional college student. After I graduated from high school, I performed a lot of labor-intensive work, farm labor, ranch labor. Worked as a Gandy dancer for the Burlington Northern Railroad. Turned to school in the mid-1980s and had some friends who I grew up with in the Fort Collins area that were already working for the Division of Water Resources. Took a trip to the San Luis Valley and found out you could get paid to walk up and down streams and rivers. So it seemed like a good gig to me. I went to school to be a teacher, and I didn't really like the politics of the school district. So I kind of found out over 30 years, water has a bit of politics in it as well.
That's for sure. What is your background to do this job when you started?
I have a degree in geography from the University of Northern Colorado. My family, most of my immediate family was in agriculture in southeastern Colorado, in mid-central Wyoming, southwestern Nebraska, south-central Nebraska. Grew up irrigating some farm ground for friends in the Rye area. So my dad was in the corporate cattle business, in the slaughter and feedlot business. Actually worked in the world's largest slaughterhouse for a period of time, which is also a good incentive to get a college education.
Just as an aside note, where did you say that slaughterhouse was? And
I was in Garden City, Kansas.
Oh.
Holcomb, Kansas, actually. At the time, it was under the operation of corporation known as Iowa Beef Processing. It's now owned by Tyson.
So in Kansas, as you were growing up, did you think much about water the same way that people in Colorado think about water?
No, that was just a place I worked. I'm actually a native of Larimer County. I was born and raised in the foothills west of Fort Collins in the LaPorte Bellevue area. Okay. I'm a graduate of Cooter High School.
Okay. It's amazing. There's a lot of water history in that LaPorte Bellevue area.
Yeah.
There certainly is. And as a small boy, we explored a lot of ditches. So.
Okay. Well, you know, one reason I'm really happy you joined us, I teach a water law course at MSU Denver and have been doing that for a number of years. For some reason, I think the pandemic did this. They've shelved several courses for a while, and that's one of the ones that was shelved. But I think it's really essential for anybody getting into the engineering field or want to be a hydrologist or whatever to really have at least a background. And what I can do in a semester is look at the different laws and regulations as far as water ownership in the East and in the West. But to get down to your type of work on the ground, that's something it lacks. I imagine it's a great job to have.
It is a great job to have. I mean, it's a job that only 100 and about 120 individuals have. Unfortunately, that's the same number that's been performing the duties as a water commissioner for, you know, since the early 1960s, since the 1969 Water Determination Act, for sure. You know, it's a job that was created by the Colorado State Legislature in February of 1879 with the creation of the position of water commissioner, the water referee in the first 10 water districts. Tom Check's book, along with Dick Stenzel, Colorado Water, Colorado's Real Gold, is a great learning book, should be a textbook in a class like within a curriculum such as yours.
Yeah.
You know, water commissioners are state employees on call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year in order to respond to requests for water delivery and emergencies. Water commissioners are the individuals who play the most indispensable role in the scheme of distributing water under Colorado's doctrine of prior appropriation. Water commissioners are stewards of Colorado's most valuable and precious natural resource, our water. And every water commissioner I've ever worked with takes that duty to heart. This isn't being a water commissioner isn't a 9-to-5, sit in your office type of job, although in certain areas of the state it has become so. But in my experience of 26 and a half years working for the Division of Water Resources, I was fortunate enough to be on the ground to actually be the first full-time water commissioner in one of the most complex basins in the state, the Blue River. And politics had a lot to do with that over the years as the most senior water right on the books as one of the originals in each of the water divisions was a ditch called the Ada Ditch, which was incorporated in August of 1860 in the French Gulf just east of Breckenridge. Didn't see first water commissioner activity in the Blue River Basin didn't occur until 1963. Happens to coincide with the completion of a small bucket near Dillon. It actually inundated Dillon.
Wow. Are you saying there were over 100 years from the time that first water right was established to the time the administration was established?
Yes, I am. Prior to my appointment as the first full-time water commissioner in the Blue River Basin in September 1 of 1990, the first water commissioner activity in the basin occurred in the early 1960s by a gentleman by the name of Lewis Cowden, who was the full-time water commissioner in the Eagle River Basin and only sparsely spent time in the Blue River. And that was the case with his, the gentleman that followed, a gentleman by the name of Wayne Wells, who trained me in my, who gave me some training to become the Blue River Water Commissioner. And let me just briefly tell you about that. I met Wayne on the 1st of September at Conoco in Breckenridge. And we drove down Highway 9 to Kremling and back in 4 hours. And that was the training I had to start my career as a water commissioner in the Blue River Basin. It was, you know, driving down the road, and that's that ditch out. That's that ditch. That's that ditch. That's that ditch. That's that ditch. And that was it.
Wow.
So, water administration from scratch in the Blue River Basin. The demand for administration in the Blue was long overdue. The players in the game in the Blue are some of the largest: Denver Water, the Bureau, Northern, Colorado Springs. So entities that have some pretty significant operations in the high country. The water commissioner job in the Blue was created specifically by legislation in 1989 and primarily to deal with winter water administration, i.e. monitoring snowmakers to ensure that the bypasses that were on the books in their decrees and the agreements were being met. That mushroomed into everything else that goes on in the Blue River today.
Wow.
When I took over administration, the Blue River was not on call. And that was kind of foreign to me as I learned to be a water commissioner for the previous summer for 4 months as a deputy on the North Slope of the Grand Mesa, where administration is much different.
What would a typical day look like for you?
So a typical day in the Blue River was certainly not like a typical day. A typical day at the beginning of my career and throughout my career in the Blue River was nothing like the day I would have as a deputy on the North Slope of the Grand Mesa or as the water commissioner in the upper Yampa above Stagecoach. So for example, in the Blue in the fall of 1990, I'm traveling up and down the river I'm meeting the Board of County Commissioners, I'm meeting ski area officials, I'm meeting the snowmakers that make the snow on the ground to take the diversions, I'm meeting ranchers down the valley and their managers. I pulled into a particular ranch one afternoon, got out, walked up to the house, knocked on the door. Ranch manager came to the door, explained to him who I was, talked to him about what I needed to do. The ability to trespass, check the ditches, through those head gates and measuring devices. Handed him my card. He looked at it, handed it back to me. Sounds like bovine scat to me. Turned around, went back inside and shut the door. He didn't say bovine scat, but so I knew I had my work cut out for me to build a rapport with the water users. And that's the most important thing a water commissioner has to do is to gain the respect of the users and the people that you serve, because it's their livelihood you're dealing with on a daily basis. Most folks, I think, understand that their water comes from, Denver Water or the city of Colorado Springs or through Northern System. They don't understand that there's someone on the ground that's actually directing those entities as to the amounts of water they can take to do what they need to do down the line, and that's a water commissioner. In all seven divisions.
I was looking at some of the information that you sent us, Scott, and this one struck me. This was a quote from J.P. Maxwell, state engineer in 1890, and I saw it in a couple of your documents. I'd just like to read it. Maybe
sure.
We can talk about that. But this is state engineer, 1890, J.P. Maxwell. His quote was, "He who expects the letter of the law in relation to irrigation to be executed with the precision of clockwork and that infallible results will be obtained has a small conception of the tangled web of difficulties in the way and a meager knowledge of the uncertainties of the element to be manipulated." So that's a mouthful, but what is that basically saying?
That the administration of water rights in the field and on the ground is not as simple as turning on the faucet and filling up your sink.
Yeah.
The administration of water entails research, on-the-ground knowledge, and a lot of that knowledge to be able to be a successful water commissioner is gained over time. You don't learn it in a single season. Seasoned water commissioners, you learn to have a feel for the water. You can observe a rock or a stick, or a high water mark to know whether or not you need to make a change, for example, instead of maybe having to drive to a head gate. There's the letter of the law and the spirit of the law. And when you administer water and you deal with farmers, ranchers, municipalities, the most important thing is to be fair. Sometimes being fair means that you have to make judgment decisions and feel comfortable doing them that you can justify.
Yeah.
One of the things on one of the handouts, when I was first hired and assigned to a 6-month position on the Grand Mesa, I asked Division 5 Division Engineer Orlin Bell what was the most important thing I needed to accomplish during my daily duties. He simply said to me, quote, unquote, keep the peace.
Yep.
Over time, that demand for keeping the peace has changed. Okay. For example, if you try to compare the administration of what goes on in Water Division 6 today, what goes on in Water Division 1 today, it's still, you know, 1923 versus 2023. In the Yampa, you're still out turning head gates yourself. You're getting into arguments with folks because they still like, because what they do on a daily basis, what they've learned to do is to fight with each other instead of cooperate with each other. And on the front range, because of the development, cooperation is much more the norm than not in modern times. Certainly wasn't on the Cooter in the 1870s, because it fostered the system that we have today, that we still use today. I think the single most important thing that's happened in Colorado water law throughout our history is the recognition initially that prior appropriation was the appropriate method in which to distribute our water, because it is so seasonally available and of such a limited supply on a seasonal basis. It's a simple recognition of we need to do something different in an arid place. It can't be overstated. And again, I think Dick Stenzel's and Tom Check's book is outstanding at pointing out a lot of that information that would use the reader and students as well, especially at a college level.
Yeah. I do use one of his books in another class, but I might look into that one. Sounds like it.
You know, folks that I think one of the most important messages to newcomers, and I'll say the folks that I've basically lived half of my life on the Front Range and half of my life on the Western Slope. And what folks on the Front Range, newcomers especially, don't understand is that it's the same water. You're in Fort Collins, half the water that's coming out of your tap comes from the Colorado River. And Greg well knows that. If you recreate in the Blue River Basin and you live in Denver, it's the same water. It's tough to water your lawn when you want to fish below Dillon Dam, too. Where do you want the water to be? So we have different choices to make these days. People that are moving here, let's just say within the last 10 years, they've chosen to live in an arid place, and they have to adapt to that. They can't live the same way they did from whence they came if they lived east of that. If they lived east of the 100th meridian.
Yeah, well stated. A lot of people, and I say this to folks, is that a lot of people don't realize what goes on behind their faucet. And there is a lot of activity, politics, negotiating, everything else that goes on. One experience I had in Oregon was working with a water master, kind of the same position.
Mm-hmm.
Bob North was his name, but he, in the Deschutes Basin, was constantly out, constantly trying to do some little gentleman deals between people. Look, can you give this guy some water for a while? Can you? And it would work, and it wouldn't work. But he was a very busy man, but he was an excellent, I think, representative of the state in trying to manage their water in that drier valley.
Mm-hmm.
Scott, what would you say to somebody who says the prior appropriation is antiquated and we should do away with that?
I think they'd have to come up with, they'd have to show some specific examples of a different system that would work anymore, that would function anymore efficiently. Again, we live in an arid place, and we have a finite amount of water. Our reservoir is white, doesn't come out of the sky. The example I like to use is that, let's just say you moved here from Kentucky, where all the bluegrass grows. And the simple question is, anyone know the annual precipitation in the state of Kentucky? About 40 to 45 inches a year. Well, when you move to Fort Collins, you get about a third of that 45 inches. And we don't live in the place we do along the Front Range, without artificial irrigation. That's what's developed northern Colorado, as well as the Arkansas Valley, as well as the Grand Valley, as well as the San Luis Valley. Okay. We're all tied to living in an arid place, and again, adapting to it. Kind of lost track of the question, sorry.
No, that's good. Another question is, what would happen if there were no water commissioners in the state?
There'd be a few dead bodies.
Sounds like a lot of chaos, too.
I didn't mean to say that flippantly, but I use the Upper Yampa and the Bear River where I finished the last 5 years of my water commissioner career, for example. I mean, you have the Hatfields and McCoys, and they enjoy it. Okay.
Yeah.
They enjoy fighting with each other. Their grandpas taught them how to steal water, and it's a game to them, and it's unfortunate. That I better not go down that road, Bill. I'm sorry. I don't want to stir a hornet's nest, so you'll have to edit that out. But I just let me put it to you this way. When I became the first full-time water commissioner in the Blue River Basin, at the end of my 20-year careers, I was praised for the actions and the work ethic that I provided. In the Upper Yampa Basin, I was a pariah. That simple.
Yeah.
So you're the same person, the same methods, but in one basin you're praised, and in the other basin...
You're the enemy. I'm the enemy. Instead of the public servant, I'm perceived as their enemy. I'm keeping something from them that they've always taken, and quite frankly, taken for granted. In the Yampa Basin, they've had the abundance of water that other basins haven't had. And a lack of development, but it's going that way. And there's some harsh realities for a few places on the western slope that still operate or would like to operate as, you know, they did 100 years ago. Aaron Light, as we mentioned off the air earlier, was charged with ensuring that measuring devices were, you know, installed in all the ditches within the, you know, within the Yampa.
And she's the division engineer.
She's the division engineer. We're doing that in the 2020s.
Wow.
And there's a cartoon from, you know, there's some articles that from the old Steamboat paper from the 1920s saying the exact same thing, almost in the exact same wording about the importance of measurement and recording. And now that we're living under the threat of a compact call, some of those folks are understanding that, maybe it is a good idea that I keep some records and maybe some accurate records and not pad the books. And that's also something that's really interesting in Tom Jack and Dick Stenzel's book about some of the water commissioners from back there. That's it. About some of the stories about them and questioning the expansion of some of those original ditches and the lack of water to fill them. And why was it being done? So when you simply time is caught up with, you know, folks in, I hate to keep picking on the Yampa, but they've been the beneficiary of being able to take more water than they're decreed in several instances. You know, in the final full summer I was there in 2021, we had the first full-time calls on several creeks besides the Bear River above Stagecoach Reservoir. And I mean things that people didn't even see in the 30s. Realities of a hard teacher.
Scott, what is a water commissioner's role in keeping accurate records?
Well, if you would, I'm just going to run down a list of duties and responsibilities that all water commissioners have. And just so folks know, the state of Colorado is divided into 7 water divisions. The South Platte, the Arkansas, the Rio Grande, San Juan Dolores, Gunnison, Colorado, the Yampa, and North Park. The North Platte River is actually an East Slope tributary, but is administered by a West Slope division out of Steamboat. Roughly 120 folks, men and women. We all have the same duties and responsibilities, but not one of us can conform those duties and responsibilities in the same manner because of the nature of the water rights involved, topography involved, the snowpack involved. So On a daily basis, water commissioners establish the local river call, regulate diversion from head gates and other stream structures. Water commissioners have the ability, the legal ability, to trespass, which is something that county sheriffs don't have in this state. Distribute storage water, distribute transbasin and transmountain water, meet contact obligations, inspect dams, inspect wells, enforce restrictions, compile diversion records, read meters, work computer charts. They don't do that much anymore, thanks to Brent Shantz. Inspect and review water court applications. In the Blue River Basin, over 20 years, I average probably a good 10 to 20 new water court applications a month to try to do a field inspection on. And what that means is someone applies for an application to a water to the water court, and the water commissioner is charged with ground truthing it for the water referee of the water court, who then, in consultation with the division engineer, present a report to the judge, to the water guru. Assistant stream flow measurements and rating measuring devices. Respond to requests for information from and concerns of the public. Develop administrative lists. Develop line diagrams. Just to mention a few. You need to be able to communicate well. You need to be able to write well. You need to have some political savvy. And you need to be willing to work hard and work with the team, which is a Teddy Roosevelt quote.
You mentioned, Scott, that measuring water is part of it. And I'm just wondering, as a water commissioner, you support the state engineer's district engineer to some degree, I'm sure. Yes. Do you have any staff or, for example, I once worked with a hydrographer that, and actually it was a criminal case I was consulting on, and he was doing water measurements, but he was excellent. And I'm wondering, what kind of people do you have working for you, or do you borrow them from the state engineer's office?
The state engineer's office has several sections, and the hydrography branch is one of them. So each division has a staff of hydrographers that work also for the division engineer, just like the water commissioners do. So it's a team effort. We have groundwater experts. We have GIS experts that work with within the division offices to support, and vice versa. Water commissioners support their efforts in the office. The number one responsibility of a water commissioner is dam safety in the state of Colorado. The number one job. Number two is the collection and administration and collection of accurate data. Without the data and accurate data, Colorado can't represent itself well, for example, in negotiation with other upstream upper basin states and the lower basin states under the compact. It's our records that we collect, that water commissioners collect in the field, and we and water users provide, that protect Colorado's ability to use our full compact entitlement.
It's a very important job, and I think it's also enticing to somebody who wants to make a difference and also enjoy the outdoors. What kind of advice would you give to somebody who's thinking about this job?
Well, I've been fortunate enough since my retirement at the end of June in 22, this past fall, I was asked to participate in some student education at the University of Northern Colorado, where I'm as a graduate of the geography department. You don't go to school to be a water commissioner. You don't. It's not like you graduate from, it seems like all the engineers that work for the Division of Water Resources already graduated from Colorado State University. That's not true. It just happens to be the norm. I'll say that the degree that I have, geography, is pretty well-rounded in the aspects of knowledge that a good water commissioner needs. Be able to read a map, be able to read some legal documents, be able to deal with people on the ground, be able to understand some of the science, some of the politics, a lot of the history. You know, I'll put a plug in for Brent Shantz, colleague of mine, who retired in June of this year, of 23. He was also has a geography degree from the University of Northern Colorado. Water Commissioner on Crew Creek has a geography degree from the University of Northern Colorado. There's a young man down in Division II that has a degree in geography. I think to be a water commissioner, you need a very well-rounded background. You have to have, and number one, you need to have a work ethic. And what water commissioners do on the Western Slope is different than what water commissioners do on the Eastern Slope, primarily in Divisions 1 and 2. In Divisions 4, 5, 6, and 7, there's still a lot of the on the ground. Turn the head gate yourself. Put the lock on it. Put the tag on it that says, don't touch this. Water commissioners in Division 1 have the advantage of technology, telemetry, where you can be in your truck and you need to make an adjustment 20 miles away. You can see that. You can make a phone call and have somebody do it for you. Go check it later. But you've developed that trust because you can see the numbers, and so can everybody else, to be able to have that occur. Be a good water commissioner, you have to be flexible, adaptable, and have a hard skin.
One thing I remember working in New Mexico is that a lot of the folks that did similar jobs out in the field doing the measurement and enforcement, and I don't know if this is still happening, but at one point and for several years, anytime they went out in the field to turn a head gate, they had a sheriff's deputy with them. Have you ever had an instance where you had to have someone with you from law enforcement just to protect
you? Almost certainly.
Okay.
Certainly, yes. During my tenure in the Blue River Basin, I worked with three different sheriffs. They all knew enough about water to know they didn't want to have anything to do with it. They knew, I made an effort to engage the sheriffs and the sheriff's department in the authority that the water commissioner has and didn't have, and when I would need backup. And I was lucky enough to always have that backup if I needed it. But certainly, yes, needed. I can tell you from my time in the Yampa River Basin that during, the summers of 2021, even into 22, there were a number of instances in the basin where water commissioners were dealing with water users who were visibly carrying firearms.
Yeah.
So
I'm not surprised.
It still happens today.
Yeah. Well, there's that old picture that they used to show a lot of those two guys beating each other over the head with shovels that you always see at conferences. And I know up in the Greeley area, I guess that happened not too many years ago between two brothers over a ditch. So
there are so many instances of that occurring. It's real. Water is our lifeblood in the West, and it's still reality in a lot of places. And what the Front Range has become in my lifetime doesn't allow people to see those things anymore. You know, I was born in the fall of 1959, and the population of Fort Collins when my parents were going to school was around 25,000 in, the 1960 census. Well, population of my hometown is pushing 160,000 people. Water supply isn't eight times as much. That's the reality of where we live, that the growth of the Front Range was inevitable once entities such as HP and, Kodak needed a workforce, an educated workforce who wanted that recreational amenity right next. Unfortunately, all those people had brothers and cousins and aunts and uncles who ended up moving here too, once they visited a few times. I don't recognize the Front Range that I grew up in, just as I do not recognize the Summit County I worked in for over 20 years. I first saw Summit County as a 9-year-old boy in 1968. I remember going to Summit County, and there was no tunnel for several years. Ski to Breckenridge, when the only paved street was the highway, minus the potholes, and P8. But Summit County is a place that's hard for me to see.
Yeah. Yeah, things are changing, that's for sure. I've been here 37 years, and just in that time frame, it's sure. Huge, very different. So.
No, I did a paper at UNC when about the growth, you know, geography measure about the growth between Fort Collins and Loveland and how it was becoming closer and closer. And this was like in the 80s, right? Well, now it's a reality. Mm-hmm. There is no space in between. Very little space in between.
And all those people need water.
Pardon me?
And all those people need water.
Yes. And the other thing that we haven't touched on is the water as a commodity. And the water that's coming off of irrigated agriculture, especially under the Northern system, and those CBT rights being used to create growth in the Northern Triangle of Loveland, Greeley, and Fort Collins. When I went to work for North Booter, a share was $37,000, and that included 4 CBT units. That same share is now worth pushing $400,000. One share of water supply and storage last spring sold for over $1 million.
Wow. And those shares you're mentioning, the CBT is a Colorado Big Thompson project, by the way.
Colorado Big Thompson project. North Pooter, for example, is the largest holder of CBT units, 40,000 units. North Pooter was, you know, the last big irrigation company to be created on the Pooter. And with the most junior water rights, the highest in the basin. So places like Fossil Creek Reservoir, you know, will develop. The concept of an exchange under our current water law basically was developed in the Pooter River Basin. Throughout that period, you know, I think one thing that folks that are under the Northern system need to realize that when the CBD was created, it was 99% served agriculture. And now over 70% serves municipalities or is controlled by municipalities. If you're not from here and you don't see that or don't understand that, you have there's a different concept. There's a different mindset about, again, where those people are moving to and why they've came. And again, it's an illusion. The white frosting, I used to use this description all the time when I would deal with the newspaper people. In Dillon, I'd say, you know, think about being in Dillon and look around you. Dillon is the hole of the donut, and the frosting is up above it. Mm-hmm. And that's our water system. Dillon receives the same amount of precipitation as the city of Fort Collins does on an annual basis. But 1,000 feet above it, you know, there's 15 more inches of water in the snowpack. And that's the most important fact. We continue to need to educate folks about is the finite nature of the resource in this region, in an arid region.
Thank you for that. That's important to bring out. We are nearly at our time. I was going to ask Greg if you had any other questions for Scott.
What would you like people listening today to leave knowing?
Simply that, you know, newcomers to the Northern Front Range, they've moved to an arid place and they need to adapt to living in a place that, you know, doesn't have the water abundance from where they may have come from, and that adapting to this environment is a must, and learning and educating themselves as to the concepts and the practices that are utilized in the West to protect and administer water is important to them, should be important to them.
Yeah.
Well said. Thank you.
Thank you,
gentlemen. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Well, we appreciate you coming on board. This has been a fascinating show. I'd actually like to invite you to one of my classes someday if you're in the area.
I would be more than happy to speak to students anytime. You let me know, we'll make it happen.
I will do that. I will certainly do that. All right. So that concludes our show for today. I'd like to thank Scott Hummer for joining us. This has been really a fascinating educational time frame for me. And I'd like to meet guys like you, Scott, that are out in the field and really doing that work that's so important for anybody that's back in the office that's trying to sort out some of this stuff. And the attorneys need this information. So with that, I'd like to say thank you for joining us. And for our audience, if you have any questions or whatever, remember, you can contact us at h2opodcast@aol.com. And we will see you in, a week or so. So thanks very much, Scott. And Greg, any parting words?
Just thank you, Scott. You are to be commended for your years of service, providing a valuable service to the people of Colorado. And thank you for being willing to pass that knowledge on to others.
My pleasure. Thank you for the opportunity.
Okay. Thanks for joining us. And we'll see you next time, Greg. And we'll be in touch, Scott. Bye, everybody.
Take care.